Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome to my show. My name is Michael Deem, and I will be your host for Bards Rise. Welcome to the Maiden Show. Before we get started, I first want to say thank you to a few people. First of all, to Q and Ra for giving me the inspiration to do this. And Ra, you take the majority of the credit for this show, because it was your comments about if everybody could push back just a little bit, the entire ball, this entire matrix would collapse. So thank you. Also, BBS, thank you for all the support you've given me. I appreciate it. I truly do. Others, Robin, Sunshine, Lauren, and Zosha, Ron Amatron, and the entire CLS team, Asha, Kristen, and Christopher, Donna the Horse Whisperer, my friend Deborah, Lucia, Nicola Evans, and Margie, Stuart Swerdlow, Saskia and her entire team, and of course, Antonio. Even though he's a little antisocial these days, thank you and I love you. Okay, so why are you listening to this show? Well, I'll tell you why you shouldn't listen to the show. I am one class short of four college degrees, and I have never made the honor roll. I'm not published. I'm not viewed as an expert in anything. I have a criminal record. You're going to be listening to a convicted felon who did time in jail, 6 months in a maximum security facility. I've been disbarred from the New York State Bar. That's right, a disgraced attorney. I've been arrested twice for refusing to wear a mask. I've been fired for refusing to wear a mask. And I've been prosecuted under the public health law for refusing to wear a mask. By all accounts, I'm a pariah, certainly a criminal. I don't have any special abilities. I can't bend spoons or read auras or foretell the future, read Akashic records. I'm just a schmo from New York. But if you listen to me, I will show you without question how New York's government is unconstitutional, and it has been for decades. I will explain to you and point out the specifics of why almost every single judge in New York State is a felon. And not just any felon, they are serial felons, meaning they've done it a whole bunch of times, and they're felons under both federal and state law. And in New York State, if a judge commits a felony, they must be removed from the bench. And if an attorney is convicted of a felony, they must be disbarred. Because we can't have felons who are not credible as attorneys and judges. But yet, that's who controls our legal system. I will show you how the New York State court system really has created a child peonage system. They have a custom and practice of violating myriad federal and state constitutional rights. And as a result of all this, not only are the people in New York State affected, who have been subjected to this literal tyranny in New York State by New York State, but also the states outside, whether it be Louisiana, Alabama, Texas, Florida, name one, they all need to hear this because they may be asked to enforce orders of protections, judgments, decisions that are rendered by New York State courts. And quite frankly, those decisions, those orders aren't worth the paper that they're written on. And I'm explaining to you why. And I'm also going to explain to you and show you what truly has been driving the New York State court system for over 140 years. That's right, a satanic Masonic fireplace has been inside New York's highest courtroom for over 140 years. And that's what they worship, and that's what they subject us to. But before we get there, Many of you have asked me, what's a bard? Why the title Bards Rise? So I'm compelled to read something to you all from the series, The Ringing Cedars of Russia. For those of you who are not familiar with it, basically a businessman named Vladimir Megre, who's Russian, went on an excursion in his boats up one of the big rivers in Russia to this far distant land, and he wound up meeting this beautiful young girl named Anastasia. And Anastasia was very, very talented in many ways. She had superior strength. She was highly, highly connected with nature, with the spirit world, and she could foretell the future. Truly a gifted individual. And we now know that the spirit of Ra was inside, or perhaps still is, inside Anastasia. And she had a lot of lessons to teach Vladimir. Unfortunately, he memorialized all of that in a 9 or 10 book series entitled The Ringing Cedars of Russia. And I would like to read from book 2, chapter 10 for you all, that will explain really the whole purpose of the title of the show and the show itself, what my goal is. And it will explain and define the target population. So here we go. The Ringing Sword of the Bard. What do you mean, Anastasia, by such extraordinary turns of phrase in speaking about the holiday? You pronounced each word in such a tone that every sound was crystal clear on its own. I tried to reproduce a picture of the holiday with precision to use detailed images. But what about the words? What particular significance do they have? Upon each word was born a multitude of happy pictures and events, Vladimir. And now they will all come true. For thought and word, you understand, are the principal instrument and grant of the grand creator, an instrument bestowed not on all that grows with flesh and bones, but just alone to man. Then why doesn't everything that people say come to pass? When the thread between the spoken word and the soul is broken, when the soul is found empty and the image dulled, then what is said, though it be plenty, is as empty as chaotic sound, and nothing can it betoken. That's sheer fantasy, Anastasia. Come on now. You let yourself believe in everything like a naive child. How can it be a fantasy, Vladimir? After all, I could give hundreds of examples from the world you live in, and even from your own life, as to what power a word has when it projects the image connected with it. Then give me an example I can understand. An example? Here is one. A person is standing on the stage before an audience and speaking words. An actor, for instance. He will repeat the same words people have heard many times before, but there is only one actor people will listen to with bated breath. Another they will not adore. The words are the same, but there is a vast difference in how they are declaimed. What do you think? Why does that happen? Well, that's actors for you. They spend years studying at drama school. Some are outstanding in their profession. Others just so-so. They memorize their lines at rehearsals so that they can say them with expression. They are taught at drama school, Vladimir, how to get inside the image that underlies the word. Then they try to reproduce that image during rehearsals. And if an actor succeeds in projecting even 10% of the invisible images underlying the words he utters, the audience will then listen with their whole attention. And if he should succeed in projecting the images behind half of his words, you will indeed call that actor a genius. For his soul is speaking directly with the souls of those sitting and standing in the auditorium. And during the play, people will laugh or cry as they feel in their soul what the actor desires to convey. Such is the instrument of the grand creator. And you, whenever you speak, with how many words can you project the corresponding image? 10% or 50? With all of them, Vladimir. That is the way great-grandfather taught me. All of them? Really? All the words? Great-grandfather said it is even possible to project images contained in the letters of the alphabet. And I learnt how to come up with an image for each letter. Why letters? Letters don't mean anything. Letters do mean something. Behind every letter in Sanskrit, for example, there are words, even whole phrases. There are letters there too, and beyond them, many written words, so that infinity is hidden in every letter. Well, isn't that something? And we just splutter out our words. Yes, that is what happens to words that have been passed down to us over thousands of years. They have passed through and penetrated time and space. And the forgotten images underlying them still today are once more attempting to knock on the door of the human race. And they watch out for our souls and even go to war on their behalf. And what kind of words are these? Is there at least one that might be familiar to me? Of course there is. At least as a sound you have heard. But people have forgotten what underlies these words. Anastasia lowered her eyes and sat silent for a while. Then, very quietly, almost in a whisper, she asked me, Vladimir, please pronounce the word bard. Bard, I said. She shuddered, almost as though in pain, and said, Oh, the indifference and banality in your pronunciation of that majestic word. You blew a cold gust of emptiness and neglect upon the candle's restless, flickering flame. A flame that has been connected through the centuries and possibly even addressed to you or someone else living today by a distant forebear. Forgetfulness of our derivation is the cause of our modern devastation. And just what didn't you like about my pronunciation? What should I be remembering in connection with that word? Anastasia fell silent. Then, in a quiet voice, she began uttering phrases straight out of antiquity. Long before Christ's birth, there lived certain people on earth. Our forefathers, who were called Celts. Their wise teachers were known as Druids. Many people inhabiting the earth at that time knelt before the Druids' knowledge of the material and spiritual worlds. Not a single Celtic warrior would dare unsheath his sword in the presence of a Druid. To be awarded the title of Druid, even at the starting level, they had to undergo at least 20 years of arduous training at the hands of a spiritual teacher, a druid priest. Those who were consecrated in this domain were known as bards. They alone had the moral authority to go out among the people and sing about and inculcate the light and truth contained in their song, using words to project images and heal people's hearts. The Celts fell subject to attacks by Roman legions. Their last battle took place at a river. The Romans noticed that there were women walking among the Celtic warriors, women with long, flowing hair. Experienced Roman commanders, though knowing what this meant, that they would have to outnumber the Celts 6-1 in order to defeat them, were unaware of the reason why. Nor do modern historians and researchers have a complete explanation. It all had to do with these unarmed women with their long, flowing hair. The Romans surged in with a mighty force, outnumbering the Celts 9-1. Aligned with their backs up against the river, the last family of fighting Celts was on the verge of defeat. They stood strong in a semicircle. Behind them was a young woman, breastfeeding a wee baby girl and singing. The young mother sang a bright and cheerful song, so as not to instill doleful fear in the little one's soul, so that she would be left with images of light. Whenever the little one tore herself away from her mother's breast, their eyes would meet. The woman would cease her singing and each time tenderly utter her baby's name, Barda. Soon, there was no longer any semicircle to defend the pair. All that stood between the nursing mother and the flood of Roman legionnaires making their way along the long, narrow path was a young and blood-gored bard, armed only with a sword. He turned to look at the woman. Their eyes met, and they smiled at each other. The wounded bard managed to stave off the Romans while the woman went down to the river and put her wee baby girl into a little boat and pushed it away from the riverbank. With one last great effort of willpower, the bleeding bard threw down his weapon at the woman's feet. She took up his sword and fought for 4 hours straight. With the legionnaires on the narrow path, preventing them from reaching the shore, their strength became spent, and they spelled each other off of the narrow path. The Roman commanders looked on in silent astonishment, but could not understand how strong and experienced soldiers could not come close enough to even scratch the woman's body. For 4 bruising hours, she fought the flood of Roman attackers. Then the woman's lungs gave out, dried up with dehydration, as no liquid had touched her tongue, and drips of blood began oozing from her cracked, beautiful lips. Slowly sinking to her knees, her strength waning all the while, she still managed one more faint smile in the direction of the little boat carrying away her wee Barda, a future songstress, downstream with the current. And one more gleam of the word and its image, which have been carried down through the millennia for the benefit of many living upon the earth today. Man's being is not only in the flesh. Man's invisible feelings, aspirations, and sensations are immeasurably sharper and greater than what can be discerned by the eye or ear. As in a mirror, they are but partially reflected in the visible material state. The baby Barda grew into girlhood and later became a woman and a mother. She lived on the earth and sang. Her songs imparted to people only bright feelings, and like the all-healing ray, helped them chase away the gloominess of the heart. Many of life's afflictions and deprivations tried to extinguish the source of this ray. The hidden forces of darkness tried to break through to it, but could not overcome the one obstacle in their way. The bard and his wife, who stood looming before them on the narrow path. Man's essence is not in the flesh, Vladimir. The bard's bleeding body projected into eternity the smile of his soul's blessed light, reflecting the unseen essence of man. And the lungs of the young mother holding the sword gave out after a while. Blood dripped, then poured from the cracks in her lips, which had caught the bard's bright smile. And now, Vladimir, believe in me. Understand and see, and you will hear the ring of the invisible sword of the bard, beating back the attack of the dark and angry forces on the path to the hearts of his descendants today. Now, please pronounce the word barred once again, Vladimir. I cannot. Not until I can say it with the proper meaning. Then I shall most certainly pronounce it. Thank you for not attempting it, Vladimir. Tell me, Anastasia, after all, you are able to tell. Who among those living today are the direct descendants of that nursing mother and the girl? The songstress Barda, or the barred warrior who stood on the narrow path? Who can forget something as important as his ancestry? Tell me, Vladimir, why this question came to your thought. I want to get a good look at that person or persons who have forgot such things, those who do not remember where they came from, those without feeling for the same. Perhaps you want to make certain that you are not the one who is forgetting. Now, what does that... Never mind, Anastasia. I've got it now. You needn't give it another thought. Let each person figure it out for themselves. Fine, she replied, and fell silent, looking at me. And I, too, kept silent for a time, reflecting on the pictures Anastasia had painted, and then I asked her, why did you choose that particular word as an example? To show you how the images underlying it in the real world will soon take visible form. Guitar strings in swarms are now vibrating under the fingers of today's Russian bards. Even back when I was dreaming about it all in the taiga, these bards were the first to feel the images, their hearts and their souls. At first, it was only in one of them that flared a flickering, burning flame and the delicate resonance of a guitar string. But then the souls of others caught the rhythm and joined in. Soon, their songs will be heard by many, both near and far. These are the bards who will help us behold the new dawn. The dawn of enlightenment of human hearts and souls. You shall hear their songs. And these will be new songs, songs of the awakening dawn. The awakening dawn, what many people call the ascension. If you've been following Q for a while, and others, Ron Amatron, they've been talking about it for a while. It is near. It's not far. But we still have work to do. Not all of it needs to be, how do I say, emotional. Certainly not violent. That's not what I'm asking anyone to do. But I am asking all of you to do something. I'm asking you to reach down and feel in your soul, in your spirit, the bard within you. Hear me, my brothers. Hear me, my sisters. Rise. Rise and beat back this abomination that has us in a grip, and has had us in a grip for hundreds and thousands of years. Rise. I'll show you how to pull back, how to push back, but it's up to you to actually do it. Everyone can do something, and that's all it takes. Just push back a little bit, just like the mermaid said. And then the golden age will rain down on us so fast and so beautifully. Truly, it will be heaven on earth. I command Prime Creation to give us perfect clarity, perfect connection, and perfect communication for this entire show. Now, And one more command that I've come up with on my own in listening to Q and to Ron Amatron. During one of the shows, Q said that it's very powerful if we preface our commands with this. I command, and fill in Prime Creator, Prime Creation, Creation Lightship, whatever you prefer, to heal and balance me exactly as I say. And Ron Amatron has said on at least two shows that Jesus was brought to the creation lightship in order to have his DNA replaced with pure light. And once that occurred, that's how he was truly able to step into his true authority and power and had his full abilities. However, not everybody may want that. So I will not make this a general command, but if you're so inspired, please adopt it and use it for yourself. I command Creation Lightship to heal and balance me exactly as I say. I command Creation Lightship to heal and balance me with pure light in place of my DNA now. I find that command to be very effective. Hopefully you will as well. And so, for those of you who are at the BBS webpage or not, I asked BBS to hang a PDF file that I put together in order to drive home the main point or the one thing that I really wanted to show you guys and gals. And that is specifically what has controlled the New York State court system, certainly their highest court, for over 140 years. If you go to the BBS webpage, and that would be bbsradio.com/bardsrise, one word, BARDSRISE. bbsradio.com/bardsrise. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a PDF hanging there entitled Bards Rise PDF file. If you click on that, it'll take you to a presentation that I put together. And don't worry, it's nothing really that graphic. The most graphic thing will be a picture of the fireplace itself, as well as a portrait of one of the former chief judges of New York State, Jonathan Lippman, with two P's. And he used that fireplace as the backdrop of his official portrait. And the artist actually cleaned it up a little bit. So that will be the worst. All right, so if we get past the first page, you'll see that the first slide has a portrait of Judith Kaye, the former or a former chief judge of New York State, and she was on the Court of Appeals, New York's highest court, for about 10 or 11 years prior to that. If you look at this, what strikes you right away is the color of her undergarment, of her scarf, blood red. Now, those of us who know, who have been following Q right away, the posts anyway, find that suspicious, right? Why blood red of all the color combinations? So I did some research to see if I was paranoid. The next slide shows again, Judith Kaye, former chief judge. And on the left side, there's an individual wearing a costume. And I found that, unfortunately, I didn't save the website that it was on, but that's a satanic costume, so named, that was a for sale on the internet. So it's the color combination, the black and the blood red. It's not just me. It's not just you folks. It's public knowledge. That color combination annotates Satanism. We'll omit the sigils that are on the costume, but it's that color combination that's key. So I found that interesting. Next picture, or next slide, you'll notice that that Judith Kay is also wearing red shoes. And when I saw this, I was reminded how Judith Kay repeatedly said when she was asked by the media how she wears red shoes almost every single day. And we now know what the red shoes are all about, and that some of that is explained in the next slide. And we see other people who are fond of wearing red shoes, or art that contains the red shoes. And it says right here in this slide, red shoes equals child sacrifice and made from human leather plus signify cannibalism. And as a former Catholic, it's really disheartening to see that more than one pope has been wearing red shoes. In fact, they're known for their red shoes. And it reminded me one time when I was a child, I was visiting the Vatican with my mother, and they had a pair of shoes from one of the former popes. I don't recall who it was, but I remember they were very small and very wide. And there was a note in there that was in Italian. I couldn't read it. And I asked my mother to translate it. And she said there was something about the leather. The shoes belonged to the certain pope, and they were made from very special leather. So there you have it. Another clue, as far as I'm concerned. Okay, next slide. More of the Red Shoe Club. We see some of the more prominent figures. And it's not just women. In the next slide, you'll see a woman, right, with a skirt and stockings showing off her red shoes. Yeah, these people are sick. Next slide, we have different videos that talk about the hidden meaning of the Wizard of Oz and the occult symbolism that it contains. Something else that the former chief judge, Judith Kay, used to say and was quoted in the papers is saying that she feels just like Dorothy in the Wizard of Oz, another reference to the occultism. And now here we have another picture on the next slide of Judith Kay, again in satanic garb, giving a Masonic handshake to an individual, and appears as though they're standing outside of a courtroom. Certainly a government building. Otherwise, why would she be wearing her robes, right? Her judge's robes. And we know that that's a Masonic handshake because in the next slide, there it is, right out of the Masonic handbook. Different hand gestures that they use. Next slide, the hidden hand. Here we have Judith Kay standing directly beneath a former chief judge of New York State, a different part of the courtroom. And you see the portrait of that former chief judge with the hidden hand, right? His hand slid inside his jacket, another Masonic symbol. And what's unique about this picture is the symbolism. Because she is directly beneath him, it indicates that she is his descendant. And her successor is to her side. And that's exactly what happened. Lippmann took over for Kay. Next slide. There we have the same Masonic handbook page showing the hidden hand inside the jacket. And throughout history, different figures, none of them really good guys, if you know the truth, with the exception of George Washington. George Washington, yes, was a Mason, but the Masonry that he knew, that he was a part of, is not the same Masonry, Freemasonry, that we know today. Soon after he left office, the Freemasons were corrupted and taken over. Here we have two pictures of Judith Kay. Again, flashing her gang hand signs, the Freemasons, right? If you look, they'll make symbols indicate the compass and square, their famous symbols. And if you do the research, you'll see that the compass actually symbolizes the male standing over the female, when the female is at the bottom, the square. And it's all about intercourse with them. It's all about sex. Or they make the hand symbol of an M. And to the picture to the right, you'll see that she has her two middle fingers, kind of like one slid over the other, which forms kind of like an M along with the two outer, the little finger and the index finger for her right hand. And here we have on the next slide, three portraits of historical figures, all making the secret M. It's all about symbolism. And it's funny because I don't know if you can look into these portraits, but look at the left eye of all three of these people. It's a little off. It's different than the right eye, right? I certainly see that clear as day. And we've been taught that that is a clear indication of some entity or dark alien inside of that individual controlling them. No surprise, because that's what happens when you engage in this Freemasonry occultism. And now another clue. Here we have six different pictures of Judith Kay, and all of them, she's wearing these unique earrings. Little squiggly line. Many of you will recognize that to be the symbol of a pedophile symbol, meaning young boy love. She's got a thing for the little kids. And how do we know that that's what it signifies? Because the next slide, we have an unclassified document from the FBI specifically showing what it means. LBL or LB logo, aka little boy lover. I'm not making this stuff up, folks. There's documents to support it. Now, in the next slide, we have Judith Kay. Talk about chutzpah. This, every time I see this art, this picture, I'm really taken aback. Because she's standing behind a podium, obviously at a collegiate graduation, and she's wearing her little pedophile symbols, and all law enforcement should know what that means. And there she is, presumably the commencement speaker, or at least a speaker at this college graduation at John Jay College. You could just pick out the beginning of it on that sign in front of the podium. John Jay College, the City University of New York, the Cooney School. John Jay College is a criminal justice college. You go there to get a two-year degree. So here she is flashing her pedophile earrings, kind of like, what are you going to do about it? You know, here I am, and you can't touch me. If you can even realize or recognize what it is that I'm doing, because I'm above you, you people are just lowly and dumb. And at this commencement ceremony at the Criminal Justice College, you can expect to find law enforcement, at least at the local and state level, and presumably at the federal level as well, whether they be faculty at one of the colleges or they have family members that are just getting into the criminal justice career. Talk about chutzpah. Here she is, the chief judge, flashing that she's a pedophile to the whole world. at a commencement ceremony where you can expect to find dozens and dozens of law enforcement. Unbelievable. The next slide, we have, once again, Chief Judge Kay with some other individuals. And she's wearing a brooch. And it looks to be symbol of an eagle. Again, Nazi symbolism. And always with the brooches, it goes to occultism. The eagle has a special meaning. And now the next slide, we see Judith Kay with her partner. And what struck me about her partner was his left eyebrow. I've seen something like that before. So I went and I found a picture, a post of Michael Aquino, who is a self-declared Satanist and a founder of some satanic church somewhere. And I just found it interesting, the similarities between the known Satanist eyebrows and that of Judith Kay's partner. Another clue. And now I kept digging and I found pictures of the entire court. And I noticed that they were on a red rug, and the red rug signifies the blood of the enemies. They are the victors and they're walking in the blood of their enemies that they've vanquished. Very sick. Again, with the red scarf, Judith Kay, and the red shoes. And I noticed they were standing in front of this one object and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I saw all these lines in it and I'm thinking to myself, there's meaning in that, but I couldn't figure out what it was. But I found this picture on the annual report for the court system that the chief judge is responsible for publishing every year. So I went to the next year and I went to see what they had. And I found another picture, you know, a portrait of the entire court in front of this thing. And I couldn't figure out what it was. So I pulled another year and I couldn't figure it out. And again, more lines. And then the next year, and another one, and another one, and another one. And this one was kind of like a reunion where you had former chief judges now without, you know, their robes on, standing in front of that same thing. And then another picture, informal picture of everybody in civilian attire, no robes. And I still couldn't figure out what this thing was that they were standing in front of. And then I found the next picture, the official portrait of Jonathan Lippman, who was standing in front of that same thing that they were using as the backdrop, only now everything made sense. You can see in the background a gruesome, tortured face over his right shoulder, very large, and over his left shoulder, another face, also tortured. Seems like the right eye in that face was also pulled out. And it looks like a bird pecking at the other eye. This is sick. This is how this individual wants to be remembered in perpetuity. The big, tough guy he is in front of all this torture and pain. Coward. And then the next slide really shows everything. This was the official unveiling of the portrait inside the courtroom of the New York Court of Appeals. The artist was very generous to Jonathan Lippman. You can see how pale he really is. And from my research, I found many high-ranking Freemasons with that same ghostly tone. I guess that's what it looks like when you have no soul left. And then the next picture, or the next slide. This is when everything started to come together, and I figured out where this fireplace was. Well, first, that it was a fireplace. And it was actually in the courtroom of the New York Court of Appeals. And that's indicated in the next two slides. You can see that. And then there's a picture up close of the fireplace itself. And then I started going back into the fireplace itself. Now, I found other pictures that were more clear than the ones I had originally found. But at the time, what you see here, the slide with the above and below of the same picture, right? The same crop, that was the clearest thing that I could find of the entire fireplace. And then I started looking into it to see what other faces or other things that it contained. And I found quite a few faces. And when you step back and you look at the entire you know, fireplace itself, you'll see this is actually satanic ritual. On the left, we have the torture phase, and that's where that really big face is, right? Then the next section, that's the consumption phase. The bird is actually pecking at the eye, the eating. Then the next little segment, we have some faces there. And I guess those are the other participants or the other beings that were present during this. And then all the way to the right, we have the remains. You'll see the faces with the circles for the mouth is being opened, the circles, the blank circles or empty circles for the eyes indicate no, you know, the mouth open. And there's even an arm that's been dismembered, just ripped off in red. Absolutely sick. Over 140 years inside New York's highest court. We go to the next phase. This is really interesting because I got a better close-up of what's there. Again, it's above and below the same crop. And I did this so that you can go and verify or maybe find your own pictures, right? A clean picture and then below what I found. And if you go to the one that I found below, you'll see in the middle, there are two faces. One of them, the face is slanted, kind of cut off. And then there in front of it, that's a dhabi. Many of you might recognize a dhabi from Harry Potter. And there's a couple others, same slide, basically, but up close. I'm going to, for those of you following along the slides, I'm going forward to the Harry Potter slide where they have the head of Dobby, right? Or it's just a wax figure, I guess. John Wayne made a movie called Big Jake. Inside that movie, there was a dog, and the dog's name was Dog. Not very original, but go figure. Well, that's exactly what they did with Dobby. A Dobby is a house djinn or a house demon, if you do the research. They can be both good or evil. But my question is, that clearly is a Dobby, the outline of a Dobby in the fireplace. What was the inspiration for that figure? Harry Potter didn't come out for another 120 years or something. So you can't say it was the movie. What was the inspiration for the Dobby in the fireplace? Going back in the next slide, right, we have this, another close-up of that same section of the fireplace. And right next to the Dobby, you'll see this face with kind of a square mouth and a square jaw, and the face is cut off at a slant. Well, we've all seen that before. Next slide. That is a Draco reptilian. You'll see a picture of a Draco reptilian. What a lot, many people never heard of that until the New Age, right? Believing in aliens and all these other things. And Dracos are the ones that are controlling the Illuminati and everything. And they're hybrids. Okay, maybe. But then we've also seen the Draco in the Amazing Spider-Man movie that came out in 2012. But they're basically the same type of entity, right? A Draco reptilian. Again, where was the inspiration or what was the inspiration to put a Draco reptilian inside the fireplace of the New York's highest courtroom over 140 years ago? Clearly, it wasn't the Spider-Man series. The comic books came out, I don't know, 70s. Still, that's over 100 years after the fireplace was created. Well, for me at this point, it's pretty obvious. These things are real. They worship them. Everything that you hear about on the Truther channels about them is true. But let's go. And then I started doing a little bit more research on Jonathan Lippman with two P's. And again, more Masonic hand signals, right? Flashing his gang signs. And how do we know? Because more Freemasonry books show it, depict it. and moving forward through the slides, going back to that official unveiling of the portrait, I now come to the slide, almost my favorite, where we see Sonia Sotomayor, former judge in the First Appellate Division in New York State, and now an Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, also wearing satanic ritual colors at the unveiling of this gruesome portrait in front of a satanic ritual fireplace. Seems all too convenient. And then the next picture we have here is a picture at the couple that's depicted at the bottom right is none other than Mimi Rocha, Miriam Rocha, who was the supervising attorney for the U.S. Southern District of New York, U.S. Attorney's Office. She was in charge of prosecuting, allegedly, pedophiles. She was there for almost 17 years before she resigned to take a position at the local law school, which she could have done part-time and still retired in a few years and get the full pension. Well, why would she do that? Well, a year later, she, after being at the law school, she announced that she was running for the Westchester County District Attorney. That's right. And then after being on that job for less than 3 years, she announced she would not be seeking re-election. Why? One of the reasons, because she railroaded me, her office, railroaded me into jail, and I filed complaints with the whole world. And eventually, it all caught up with her. Whether it was that or the fact that she wasn't prosecuting pedophiles, but she was protecting them, the high-ranking pedophiles. And as you work through the slides, you'll see this information. She was protecting Jeffrey Epstein and his crew. People want to know, you know, why, how that can happen. There it is. Mimi Rocha. And I'm not afraid to go out on worldwide radio and say that, because it is a matter of public concern. And then finally, New York State actually publishes something, a little handout about the court, the New York Court of Appeals itself. And in it, they have various pictures of not just the current courthouse, but also a prior version of it. And if you look at the bottom of one of those pictures, you'll see that there's a compass and square symbol on the floor, to signify that the Freemasons basically own that courthouse. So, yes, people, everything that Jordan Maxwell says about the Freemasons is true. They worship Lucifer, Satan. It is really, really dark and really, really evil. And there you have it. That's what's been driving New York State for over 140 years. And it is time for people to know about it, to stand up and not tolerate it anymore. Next week, I'm going to show you again and explain to you why New York State's government is unconstitutional. Anything that comes out of the court system, at least, if not the entire government, including legislation, violates the federal constitution, and how every judge should be in federal prison. Well, I'd say at least 90 to 95% of the judges should be in federal prison. For those of you who want to read ahead, you may want to go ahead and read the Federalist Papers, numbers 47 and 78. Compare that with the New York State Constitution, Article 6, Sections 28, 29, and 30. And the Federal Constitution's Guarantee Clause, three items. So thank you for listening, folks. I appreciate your time. Hopefully you found this of value, and we'll do it again next week. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh.